You're listening to Real Talk, sponsored by Marcus Werenberg Theaters. I'm Colin Ritter.
And I'm Peter Lewis.
And today we return to our decade series. Today, it's our decade, the 90s.
And as usual, chronological, we went 80s, 70s, now we're 90s.
Exactly. Because who's counting,
right? Who cares?
Exactly. We're completely out of order.
We're doing what Star Wars did. Original, prequel, sequel.
Exactly. That's exactly right. The 90s. Fun year for us, I guess, because we were born.
Technically alive,
yeah. Young, but alive. And, you know, I guess not surprisingly, looking back, a lot of good movies in mm-hmm. the 90s.
I wonder if that's more because, again, we were so close that decade, we're able to get those films a little easier
perhaps
than we were. But again, I mean, just looking at this long Best of the Rest list I have in front
of me.
Oh, gosh,
yeah.
It's much longer than I had the 70s and 80s episode, so it's going to be a fun one.
It is, and as we always do with our decades episodes, we are going to be giving you our personal top three from the decade, and as Peter has already mentioned, be talking about the Best of the Rest. So I think we can just start with the Best of the Rest list because there is so much to talk about for the 90s.
And I think we do also have two talking points, and
yeah.
I'd say it's a good to start one because in this decade you had, I believe, the first film to hit $1 billion at the box office.
Yeah.
Or definitely $2 billion for sure.
Yeah.
James Cameron's Titanic. The biggest film, I think, next, I mean, again, Avatar's ahead of it box office wise, but I don't remember the obsession for Avatar being as crazy as like, ridding the Titanic.
Exactly,
obsession.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching that as a kid, and you had the two VHSs, you know, you watched half of it, and you put the second one in.
That was the best thing ever.
Exactly.
And I remember growing up, I was obsessed with like just the Titanic story.
Oh,
and
so
all that.
Was I.
And so, of course, I was watching the movie. Now, when I look back, I'm like, oh my God, that script.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a bad script.
And being the naive kid that I was, for years, you know, I thought that was how the Titanic actually went down. No pun intended. But I thought the storyline was
100
real.
It's been 100 years. We can make the jokes.
Exactly. But yeah, it's a fun movie, but got a lot of hype. But you said, like you said, bad script.
On a technical level, though, I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
There was a lot of practical. I think it was almost all practical
yeah.
from what I've seen behind the scenes. I mean, just the sets they had, how they had water. It's impressive. I'll give James Cameron credit. He knows how to make a film look intense.
He does. He you know, I was recently watching an interview with him that was promoting the new Avatar Land at Walt Disney World. And he was talking about his obsession with story and his obsession with sort of his obsession with making his stories life, real life. You know, why he was so excited about Avatar Land is because it's now fully conceptualized. It's not, you know, effects. It's practical. It's in front of you. You can walk through the world with a Na'vi. And you see that in Titanic. You know, you really see that love for bringing the story to life because, like you said, it was a majority practical effects. You know, as we both talked about, something we love and something that made us love the film industry as kids, so I can respect it.
And again, you know, it's hard to be too critical. I mean, again, it's a bad script. You can't really get around that.
Yeah.
But it's hard to be too critical on that movie because they've had Titanic films before.
Yeah.
I still would argue A Night to Remember from 1958, I believe.
Fact check.
Thank you. Is still the best Titanic movie, in my opinion, even though from a historical aspect of, you know, how the ship fell apart. Well, technically, the 97 film's wrong, too, because they went back.
Yep, 1958.
Wow.
Nice work.
Got something right for once.
Yeah.
But yeah, a few years back, James Cameron was with National Geographic, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they were redoing, like, how the Titanic fell apart and all that.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, the 97 film is technically wrong. Now, but it's close. It's the closest we've gotten to the more accurate story.
Exactly.
As, you know,
as to what, as opposed to, you know, well, when compared to what actually happened.
You know, the research we have, because, again, you know, the ship was basically never found until 1985. So,
exactly.
I mean, again, it's hard to get it too right. Again, you know, eyewitness accounts from 1912. Yeah, good luck.
Exactly. Good luck with that one.
Yeah.
Something else we have in the 90s, something big we have in the 90s, one of Peter's favorite movies from one of his favorite franchises, Star Wars Episode I. Peter hates Star Wars, which we've talked about in the past.
Very well.
So, yeah, I mean, we have that movie, which as a kid I was obsessed with.
Again, movie came out May 19th, so I was a month away from turning four. So again, I barely remember the hype, but there's a documentary I love called The People versus George Lucas, which looks into, you know, like, again, we're going to get into this with Star Wars, you know, George Lucas changing, you know, Star Wars films, the prequels, all that.
Oh, yeah.
The hype for this movie, I think, was bigger than Episode 7.
Yeah, it was,
by far.
It was hyped.
People were insane. One of my favorite things was, you'll appreciate this. People went to see, pay a ticket to see Bug's Life. Because it came out shortly when the first trailer for Star Wars Episode 1 dropped.
Yeah.
People paid money to see Bug's Life
just to see the trailer.
And left.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's like back in the day when people would pay just to see the Disney shorts before the actual the motion picture. Isn't that crazy?
And again, even pre major internet age that we're in now, you know, people were crashing their office and home servers because, you know,
people had to see this.
We didn't have the technology yet.
Yeah.
And it just was such a hyped film.
It was hyped.
And to see a video of, you know, opening night for that movie and people just like so happy, cheering, like even more so in Episode 7, because I think people walked in that slate like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, what's going to happen?
Disney bought this out. What's going to happen?
Come on. Is there going to be a new princess?
Remember last time? And just to see them like cheer, and then the next thing you know, the opening crawl starts like, oh boy.
Yep. Here we go.
It's, again, we're going to get into Star Wars this summer, original trilogy, prequels, all that noise.
All that noise.
So we won't go too in-depth with Episode 1 here. I think, looking back, it's not as bad as people it to be.
I like the characters in it. I love Qui-Gon Jinn. I love the young Obi-Wan. Darth Maul could have been incredible. I love him as a concept. I think he could have been better.
I'll say my overall thing that I appreciate was at least George Lucas looked like he was putting effort into this.
Yeah.
There was a mix of practical and CGI. And again, the CGI wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad.
It holds up much better than Episode 2 and Episode 3. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely.
But again, just overall, it's like,
it fell short.
Again, we'll have to talk about more like what George Lucas was thinking when we get into our Star Wars series.
Yeah.
But just for now, like, no, it was a weird time.
Weird time.
Which is a great way to close out the decade.
Exactly. Peter hates Star Wars so much that he's wearing a Star Wars shirt right now.
I know.
Actually. Fun fact.
Yeah, but I'll say, you know, if you're going to close out the millennium, close out with disappointment, you know?
Exactly. I mean, everyone's expecting Y2K. They think it's all over with. Let's give them a Star Wars movie to be disappointed by. Anyways, moving on.
So those are the two talking points, and now I guess we'll get to our number three favorite film
number
of the 90s.
Three. Start us off, Peter. What is your bronze medal for the 90s?
Oh, geez. Maybe. You see, when you say medal, I'm like, oh, really? Should this be number three?
Yeah.
But you know what?
You chose it.
Yeah, true. Ironically enough, from James Cameron, Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
You and James Cameron, you have a love-hate relationship with this guy.
Yeah, pretty accurate. I will say, though, in terms of, you know, the films we talk about, you know, that the sequel that outdoes the predecessor.
Yeah.
Terminator 2 has to be on the high level.
See, that's like me with Back to the Future.
Exactly.
Yep.
And again, there's also, of course, Empire Strikes Back and Star Wars.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
All that jazz. But Terminator 2 Judgment Day is shockingly brilliant. Again, Terminator 1 was a brilliant movie. How it, you know, mixed the sci-fi, the horror, all that together.
Exactly.
And how it's like, okay, here's the sequel now. We got to have Arnold Schwarzenegger back, because of course we do. What are we going to do now?
Peter loves Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, you're gonna hear me talk about a lot of his movies in this episode, so get ready for that.
Get ready.
But yeah, you know, it's like, okay, John Connor's grown up, Sarah Connor's in a mental asylum. Let's have Arnold Schwarzenegger be the good guy and just be brilliant at it.
Absolutely.
He speaks so few lines here. He gets so much money to say these lines.
I want that gig.
Oh.
That's the gig I want
life. I just want to be badass like he was in his prime.
Exactly.
But again, you know, it kind of reminds me of Mad Max Fury Road in a lot of ways. Like how there's a lot of high octane action.
Yeah.
That, right, Peter?
Yeah.
And you know how it just flows well, and you know there's those breaks between the action so you don't get too burnt out.
Yeah.
But they actually mean something. Like, there's actually development, so you're completely invested in how the story's turning out.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
And again, you know, we talk about CGI. Again, it's almost a cliche on the show to say CGI that holds up well.
Yeah.
The CGI, I'm still amazed how they did that.
Oh, I agree.
1991. That blows my mind.
I agree.
How they did the T1. Search that. What was the name of the villain in Terminator 2? But the... forget the name of the guy, but you know, the cop, all that, Skynet's new way to kill Sarah Connor and all that. Robert Patrick.
Name. Yeah, you were thinking T-1000.
Okay, I was about to say that, but I was like, is that right?
Yep.
But it, just like the way he works, like, you know, how he can phase
stuff. Like the Oh gosh, the jail scene.
Yeah,
that was
how
incredible.
He goes to the bars. Yes, and, you know, there's that great scene where the warden or one of the guards, like the secret falls from ice, is just so shocked and dumbfounded by it.
Yeah,
Colin has pictures of this T-1000. I mean, just
It was brilliant.
All
it really
those bullet
was.
Holes were practical effects. Watch behind the scenes footage of this film. It is shocking how they did this. Like, they somehow, of course, it's LA, so they can obviously close down a freeway at night to make a film.
See, one of the reasons I love LA. Oh, you can't do that anywhere else.
No.
Not really, though.
I mean, you could kind of do it here.
Yeah, you could kind of do it here in Cape. I mean, we did for Gone Girl, so.
True.
Yeah.
But again, you know, just the idea that you have. One of my favorite parts of Terminator 2 is John Connor tells Arnold Schwarzenegger to be like, hey, I don't want you to kill anybody. He's like, okay. And it's just like this, always this interesting thing. Like, how is he going to get out of this situation where he kind of has to, you know, have a body count, but how is he going to get out of it with nothing like that? And there's that scene where, you know, they're at the headquarters, the police are around him, he comes out with the minigun.
Oh, yeah.
Just blows cop cars up, and somehow, like, that's incredible.
It is. It really is.
And it's just, that's what I love about it. It's so creative, and, oh, one of my favorite endings in a movie ever, where...
No doubt.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's going down, because, you know, he's got to eliminate the last source of this whole, you know, universe to save the world from Judgment Day, which, again, part three kind of... ruined, but you know, we don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that.
It's not canon.
Exactly.
And you know, he's going down, he does the thumbs up as he's and there's, again, you ca- it's easy to laugh at that, but at the same time, it's like, it's so cool.
It is.
Just overall, it's a cool movie.
It is a really cool movie. Almost, it's kind of like one of those endings, it's like you said, it's a laughable meaning, kind of like the ending of Jaws.
Yeah.
You know how, you know, the shark gets blown up, but you know, we love it. We love it for that reason.
And again, I could easily watch this right now.
Yeah. That's how I feel about my number three.
And yours, Colin, number three.
1991, Hook.
Interesting.
Yeah, good movie. Blasted on Rotten Tomatoes.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, has a lot of really interesting... You know, I can see why people would not like this movie. I get that. I get why people would not, but again, escapism, high fantasy, I love it so much. I mean, let's not even talk about the involvement, who helped work on this movie, because that goes without saying. Obviously, Robin Williams... brilliant. It's just a fun movie. It's another movie that I remember from my childhood that I'm going to love regardless.
I'll give you that it had a big, fun production value.
It did.
And you could see that.
Major sets, practical sets. And it worked for me. We say that all the time on here. It worked for me, but it really did. I think it's a lot of fun. And as mentioned before, the original Peter Pan, the Walt Disney Animation Studios Peter Pan, is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I love seeing different adaptations of that story. And I think this is one of the, probably the most fun, in my book, live action adaptation of the story of Peter Pan. Although it doesn't really follow the actual fable whatsoever, it's fun to see those characters that you kind of know and love from the animated classic sort of remade into these live action characters that kind of exist in the same world but don't exist in the same world at all. Hook is a fabulous character in this movie. I think everyone in this movie is very lovable by the end. You kind of even have a soft spot for Hook, Captain Hook, by the end. Now, the ending, you could say, is kind of cheesy. I think it could have been a little more epic. But given the type of movie that it was, I think it worked. You know, the alligator falling or the crocodile falling and then swallowing Hook. You know, maybe you could do without that. But
it could have used Hook going into a lava pit. And instead of doing the thumbs up, it's the hook.
Exactly. The hook or something a little more, because to me, the very end of the movie was kind of a cop-out. I feel like there was so much adventure, and there's a good story. I love these movies with these life lessons and these stories. I'm a Full House kind of guy. I love this.
Fair enough.
You know, cue the soft music, and that's what Hook is to me. so for that reason, I love it.
Again, you know... I believe the story of Peter Pan is public domain, so technically anybody can do it.
Exactly.
It, and it's understandable, and you're going to take some creative liberties when you do something new with that story.
Yeah.
Again, I'll tell you, it's much better than the Pan movie from...
Oh, my gosh, that was awful.
Do you want to talk about that?
I do not want to talk about that
at
all.
Fair enough, because I forgot about most of the movie.
Very forgetful.
Again, it's a fun... It's a definitive 90s film, I would say. You know, it has the quality of what you're looking for from that decade. You know, again... Fair enough, maybe not the best, but, you know, again, this is the personal favorite list, so.
Exactly, that's the thing, it's completely opinion-based. Let me see here, let me...
About to say, if we were doing what we would consider the greatest of all time, not from our personal opinion, but like like more of a subjective list.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, please give us hell.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. And I feel, again, I have a lot of emotional nostalgic ties to Hook, watching it with my grandparents growing up, but I mean, my boy's behind it, Spielberg, and my other boy, John Williams, mm-hmm. and then Spielberg's production company, Amblin. I think it's fun. I really think it's one of, we're not going to talk about his involvement in some of the Terminator, or the, not Terminator, the Transformer movies, but surprisingly, one of his lowest rated movies,
mm-hmm.
Especially from when we're compiling 70s, 80s, 90s. One of Spielberg's lowest rated movies of all time. I forget what it, let me see here. Yeah, 52% on Metacritic. You know, I think it deserves higher than that.
Well, if we can transition back into Best of the Rest, there's another favorite film from the 90s that people forget. Not critically successful. Forrest Gump.
Yeah, that's right.
I love that film.
So do I.
But I think right now it's only a 60, I think it was like low 60s on Rotten Tomatoes.
Let's see here. 72. So it's been boosted up a little bit.
I think that's because, you know, how it came out, people are like, oh, this is terrible. And, you know, like, as time goes on, you're like, I like this film. Like, Empire Strike Back was, you know, critics were not crazy about it when it came out, but now, like, one of the greatest films.
And it was Best Picture. I mean.
Fair.
Yeah. Let's see here.
I will say, interesting way they handled that movie, because that's a movie that could have gone off track.
Oh, absolutely.
And there were some moments in that movie where you watch, like, oh boy, here it comes.
It's kind of cringy. Yeah, you think you're going to cringe.
Yeah.
I think it was a brilliant performance on Tom Hanks' part.
So believable.
It really was, and that's kind of, as we mentioned, it's hard to do, and you can really overstep your bounds very easily and make it very offensive.
I think it was more than respectable how that was handled.
I absolutely agree.
And again, of course, it's Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks knows what his role is,
how he does
approach it.
And it tugs on your heartstrings, too. It really does, especially at the end. When he walks into the living room and he sees his kid, that part gets me, man.
And it makes you feel so many different emotions about certain characters, like, you know, Jenny, Lieutenant Dan, Bubba.
I mean, so many great characters in that movie. It deserves way higher than a 72%.
It's one of those funny films where, like, if there's a film I like and people have a negative opinion, I'm like, I'll read the opinion, like, okay, that's fair enough.
Fair enough.
Here I read these, I'm like, I just don't see what you mean. And again, a lot of the times it's like, you know, like the portrayal of Forrest Gump. Like, that's the best you could have easily gotten that role.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know of anyone who could have done it better. Yeah. I really don't. I don't think anyone could have done it better.
And it's one of the few films I would argue that, say, outdid the book.
Absolutely.
Forrest Gump was based on a book, which is, it's kind of like the Godfather book. It's all right, but oh my God, the movie, more than outdoes it.
Blows it out of the water, no doubt.
Because it takes out a lot of the stupid things that were kind of holding it back.
Exactly.
But
good movie.
Absolutely.
Let's transition into your silver medal, number two. No surprise here.
Pulp Fiction.
Oh, my gosh. No. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I don't mind Pulp Fiction. I really don't. I mean, it's a cult classic. You have to like it. If you say you don't like it, then people think you're nuts.
I feel like you're lying if you say you don't like it.
Exactly. I'm just giving you crap because of the director.
Yeah. Well, I know how you feel about him.
I don't hate Quentin Tarantino. I just don't love him.
Like what we did with the Spielberg, we're going to do a Quentin Tarantino episode, and you're going to love it.
That's going to be an hour. That's going to be a very long hour.
I will say,
but anyways.
I don't know what to say about Pulp Fiction that has already been said.
Yeah.
And I love how it's structured. Again, you have to also take into account Reservoir Dogs. You know, 90s are when I think Tarantino was at his absolute best.
Yeah.
You know, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown. Again, you know. It's funny to see, you know, now like Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained, or even Hateful Eight. Like, he does go extreme. I'll give you that.
What do I call it? The perfect movie for a lazy viewer. Do you like a lot of really fast edits? Quentin Tarantino is your man.
You and me are gonna.
Really bad for the people who work in post production for that guy because they have to be exhausted by the time this film drops. Because like edit cut here, fast cut. Poor people.
I will say this is when he was. Again, starting as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
So he was very much more pulled back than what he is now.
Exactly.
And it's kind of understandable. That's how most directors are. Like, they kind of get a little crazy as they go on and more established.
See, I love that. Aren't you so excited when you get to that point to where you don't care anymore and you reach a certain level of, whether it be success or failure in life, that you just realize you don't care anymore and just do whatever?
I'm just not going to talk about, I got to say, Kevin Smith, that's what I love him for. Like, you know, because I'm obviously going to talk about Clerks later in this, but that's what he's kind of become. He's kind of become that, want to say, hack fraud director in a way, but he's fine with it. Because he's like, you know what? I did Clerks. I did Mallrats. Don't really like Mallrats, but people do for some reason. Did Chasing It. Did a lot of good things in the 90s. And, you know, he's like, you know what? So I'm going to do what I want to do now.
Do what I want to do. Exactly. And
sometimes
the
thing, it works. Sometimes it doesn't.
That's what I love about it. That's the beauty about it. Because if you have something... So when you have a movie that's platformed up for quote-unquote success, because it's always up in the air regardless, but when you have a movie that's platformed for success, I feel like it can really become predictable and become kind of draining. So I hate to bring this movie up because it's been a long time since I've talked about it, but you know how I feel about La La Land, beautiful piece of American cinema. That was kind of an out-of-the-dark movie. I mean, Damien Chazelle, very, very young director, 32 years old. We have no clue what's going to happen because this style of movie hasn't been made in years, and then it just works. And because he did what he likes, he wasn't trying to fit. And the ending of that movie, don't get me started. So many people say they hate the ending because they want the happy ending, but I love that it ended on a horribly sad note because no one else in Hollywood has the guts to do that.
It's kind of like the result of the Academy Awards.
Exactly. Yeah.
You really don't want me to talk about Pulp Fiction because we just got so far off.
Go ahead. Finish talking about Pulp Fiction. Go for it.
Gave new life into John Travolta's, one of my favorite roles of him.
Next, I agree. I can give you that.
I'd say Saturday Night Fever is a close second, but him in this film is great. Samuel Jackson, him and Quentin Tarantino work together so well. I don't care what anybody says. They could do every film together for the rest of the time. I'd be happy.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis is great in this. Interesting side story. Again, how it's structured, you know, it's an out-of-order sequence, which, you know, again, that's how Reservoir Dogs was to an extent, and now he, in Pulp Fiction, completely commits to that idea, and it works, which is, again, to take a story that's linear and then, you know, put it out of order, that's a hard thing to do.
It is very hard to do.
Because you can't just put it anywhere. You have to put it in an order that makes sense, where you can follow and see what's going on. And be
exactly.
Like, that's how they got to that point.
Yep.
And again, Samuel Jackson's, you know, reading of scripture at the end is one of my favorite things ever.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, love that scene. I just love this, how this movie was made. I think it's Quentin Tarantino at his best direction, script writing, just everything. I think it's kind of one of those things, like, he's always going to be compared to that, and I don't think he's ever gotten past that.
Yeah.
So, again, you can kind of say it's one of those things where it's like you peaked way too early.
Yeah.
But it didn't really hold, I wouldn't argue it held back his career, because he's had some interesting films.
Oh, no doubt. He's definitely had success, and as you mentioned, interesting, very interesting films.
Oh, God. We're going to do that Quentin Tarantino episode after this just for you.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Can't wait.
Yeah, that's all I can say about Paul. Again, if you're listening to this, you've probably seen it.
You've seen it.
You know what I'm talking about.
If you're listening to a film podcast, you've seen Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And if you haven't, do me a favor. Hit the stop button and just stop listening right now. I'm just kidding.
That's how we treat our viewers.
We need listeners. I'm just kidding.
What's your number two?
Number two, very cliche number two for me. I'm not going to talk about it a whole lot because it kind of speaks for itself. 1995. Toy Story. I have the most juvenile list of favorite movies of all time, but that's okay. I embrace it.
That's why I'm the pretentious one.
Exactly. You're pretentious. I'm mainstream. That's why I love Spielberg. Anyways, Toy Story, great fun, critically acclaimed, AFI Top 100 movie, one of the best animated movies ever made, I think, in history. The most lovable characters. This is when you really see Pixar has their stuff together. They absolutely do. And they, honestly, still to this day, I would say Pixar is the animation powerhouse of our generation, which in return, quote unquote, makes Disney the powerhouse because Disney owns Pixar. But from a storytelling standpoint, no one does it better than Pixar with regard to animation. And this right here sets the standard for, I think, what Pixar would go on to do even up to this day. Such an interesting concept to think toys are real, like animate objects. So, something that could be done very poorly, kind of like we talked about earlier with Forrest Gump. I mean, obviously not the same comparison, but you could do this movie and it could be just awful. It could be cheesy, but you love the characters. You feel sad for the characters. You feel happy for the characters. It's an adventure, great music. And I think it's a movie I can always go back and watch. Again, I have so many nostalgic ties to this movie from being a kid and watching it, and I think it's just great.
Yeah, I can't.
I mean, there's nothing else to say about it. I mean,
I think that was...
Toy Story's Toy Story.
That was in your personal top 10 from a few weeks back.
It was,
so yeah, we definitely talked about that. And, like I say, I don't think I said this, and I just thought this. Pixar can take like these weird concepts that you wouldn't think to touch and make it gold. Like, I don't think anyone ever did that with, you know, the idea of toys before. Like, they're alive, there's a story behind it, there's an emotional attachment.
Pixar has a great way of giving strange things feelings and emotion, but in a way that works really well. I will say, so anyone, again, we have a whole series dedicated to Walt Disney and the Walt Disney Animation Studios, and everyone knows how I feel about Walt Disney.
Part three coming up.
Part three is coming up, correct. But I will say this, and I think you can agree with this. I think the three heavy hitters in animation, the three brightest minds that have ever existed in animation are Walt Disney. Now, Walt wasn't really a great animator. We've talked about this before. Walt was more the idea guy. He was he was kind of the man behind the curtain. But
kind of like Steve Jobs was. Like, he wasn't exactly good at technology, but he had the vision.
He had the
to
vision.
Get you
he
going.
Knew where you wanted to go. Hayao Miyazaki from Studio Ghibli.
Easy.
Although he is an incredible animator.
Yeah.
And then John Lasseter, also an incredible animator. He transformed animation. He really truly did, because he introduced this idea of 3D animation that was very up in the air. You know, I mean, it's kind of a weird concept at the time, because, and it's something that I even still to this day kind of have a problem with, depending on who does it, because I love hand drawn animation so much. But Pixar has made me love 3D computer animation, and I think it's done better than anyone else who tries to do it. Even Disney's in-house 3D animation doesn't even compare to what Pixar does, and they own the company. Pull the people from Pixar down to the Walt Disney Studios in Burbank and say, hey, help us. They may be helping. I don't know. I don't work for the Walt Disney Animation Studio, so I can't speak on that. But there's a certain look with Pixar films that Disney simply doesn't have, and the look that Pixar films has, they let me be more connected. I mean, they really do, because they look so incredible.
I will say about Pixar, especially in the modern, because again, John Lasseter, you know, kind of recreated animation for this modern age.
Oh, without a doubt.
And you think about other animation studios, you know, they're kind of really hit or miss films.
Absolutely.
And even if you think they're good, you kind of like put them under a microscope, like Despicable Me, for instance. Like, it's a pretty basic story.
Yeah.
And Despicable Me too. Again, Illumination Studio, that's what they do. They make it look like it's much better than it actually is, until you watch it the second time, like, oh my god!
But
this
people
is,
love it. People again, love the Minions.
Which is
you know exactly. You know,
well,
it's just
the Minion movie was an adventure.
But I mean, in general, with regard to characters from Despicable Me, people are obsessed with the Minions.
But we've
kind of
gotten,
what I mean?
Yeah, we've kind of gotten a way of animation can be high storytelling, especially on the mainstream level, because you know there's those you know indie filmmakers that are doing it. You know, the non-mainstream. Of course, they're always going to exist. But again, on the mainstream level, we've kind of gotten away from that. But Pixar's always been trying to do that.
Absolutely.
Even though a few years ago, you know, there was obviously Brave, Cars 2, Monsters University, which people can obviously say that was definitely Disney getting their hands where they shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Which I agree with.
I think of those you mentioned, I think Monsters University was the best of those three you just mentioned. I can't even say I hated that one at all, because I actually enjoyed it. I liked that one the most of the three. Let me say that. Brave wasn't my favorite. Cars 2 was garbage. What can you say?
Yeah.
Anyways.
But yeah, that's basically all you can say about Toy Story 2.
When we could talk for
Toy Story 1. Sorry.
We could talk for hours about it, so there's no need to do that. Moving on.
Well, let's get.
Or do you want to do Best of the Rest
final
before?
Best of the Rest. We'll just, you know.
I can't believe Clerks wasn't in your top three. That makes zero sense to me. You talk about that constantly.
Well, you see my number one here. I wrote this a while back.
Oh, yeah. I see your number one.
Well, I'm kind of going to move it to my Best of the Rest. I know it's weird because it was my
third. What?
I'm going to move Iron Giant to my Best of the Rest. Here's the thing. Lists are weird, especially when it comes to films.
Lists are weird. They change literally every 5 minutes.
Again, I said Iron Giant was my third favorite film of all time. It's probably locked up there. But for some reason, I think of in terms of the... I don't know why. When I think in terms of the 90s, I love it. Obviously, it's one of those films I remember. But I'm like, looking at my list, there's an obvious film that has to be number one for me. But again, we'll say that. We're going to get to the main event. Obviously, Clerks, I've talked about
Clerks
to death. I still need to have you see that.
I have not watched Clerks.
Because eventually you're going to get to an age where you're going to hate it no matter what. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
That's kind of how... That's the unfortunate thing about Kevin Smith films. Like, you have to see him at a certain time or else.
Yeah.
Truman Show's a great film.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about The Truman Show.
Here's something I'm surprised you forgot about. Apollo 13.
Oh my gosh, I'm losing it. We should have done a top five, and I honestly, man, The Truman Show, I love that movie so much. How did I not remember that?
There's a lot of films on here that I could make a case for, like I love Fight Club.
Yeah.
I love Total Recall. It's probably the best Schwarzenegger film.
I'm still so upset that I didn't put The Truman Show. I cannot believe I forgot that. I can watch that movie right now.
This was the decade of the Coen brothers. Fargo, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I got my... Yeah, not going to spoil it yet. Shawshank Redemption, that's a debatable
yeah,
one. That's something I kind of want to put in. There was Heat, you know, the best of both worlds in the crime genre, finally coming together. We talked about Scream's a good one. Unforget. Again, it was a hell of a decade for movies.
Yeah.
It's kind of the mix of the 70s and 80s, where you had the very smart filmmaking meeting the escapism, big blockbuster films that were coming out of the 80s.
Exactly.
It was kind of the decade where it's like they were clashing with each other. And it's like one side has to win, and obviously the big bluster mentality kind of won out in the end.
Yeah, which is a shame.
And we'll get to the 2000s. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. Not a lot of... I mean, we have stuff to talk about in the 2000s, but...
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Good films, too. But, Colin, looking at this list, I think my favorite film that defines the 90s for me is from the Coen brothers.
Oh, gosh.
The Big Lebowski.
The Big Lebowski. I knew you were going to say that.
Have you seen this film?
No, I have not.
I will say you will hate it your first time around, because that's how I was.
I hate a lot of things, just like you hate Star Wars.
You hate things you've never seen, though. That's the problem.
Absolutely, I do. I hate buying into the hype.
I will say this. My second time watching The Big Lebowski, because that's kind of the thing with the Coens, like, for some reason you watch their films, you're never satisfied the first time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of their shtick in a way.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like your shtick is hating Star Wars.
Exactly. I can't wait to get into that series.
Yeah, it's going to be rough.
The Big Lebowski is so unusual. I mean, John Goodman, Steve Buscemi, and, oh my God, I just forgot. Who's the main character, Colin?
Jeff Bridges?
Thank you.
Wait, you love Jeff Bridges. How'd you forget that?
It's been a long morning.
You're losing it, Peter.
At the time of recording this, folks, my Penguins won the Stanley Cup last night.
Oh, gosh. We're not even going to talk about that mess.
Speaking of Penguins, sudden death in the 90s.
Yeah.
Great movie.
It's awful.
Just the way The Big Lebowski is structured, it's almost an anti-film. And that's what I love about it. Like, it makes no quarrel what it's trying to be. It wants to be weird, and it owns up to it, and it's perfect in a way. Just how these characters interact, how the story unfolds, it's so weird, but it works. It almost has that stupid blockbuster mentality. And again, like I said, the 90s was the time when blockbuster met high creativity and they kind of merged together, like, or competing.
Yeah.
That's what this film does for me. And that's why when I looked, I was like, that has to be number one.
Fair enough. Again, I can't speak a lot about it because, unfortunately, I've not watched it.
I will show. Again, have to watch it with you twice.
Oh, gosh.
But I guarantee you, eventually you will be like, this is one of the greatest things.
I may like it the first time. You don't know. You never know.
Depends how you are with the Coen brothers.
Yeah, true.
Mr. Khan, what is your number one? We all know it.
My number one, Steven Spielberg, 1993, Jurassic Park. Gosh, such a good movie.
I thought it was going to be Jingle All the Way.
Oh, gosh. You know what? I actually love that movie when I was little. I actually really love that
movie. We got to do a Christmas. We have to do a Christmas
movie special. To be continued in December.
Jesus.
A lot to talk about there. But yeah, the Jurassic Park, what else is there to say? We had an entire episode on Steven Spielberg, so I'm not going to waste your time listening.
How many times have we talked about this movie on Real Talk?
Too many. Almost as many times as we've talked about La La Land. Which, guys, let me tell you, I just rewatched again. I took a break because I saw it a lot in the theaters. I mean, a lot in the theaters.
Hey, Jurassic Park.
I went back. It's incredible. Watch it. Anyways, Jurassic Park, another movie I can literally watch at any given time, because I think it's great. Incredible music, incredible director behind, great characters. Such a fun adventure movie that Steven Spielberg is so great at, something he's, you know, known for. And I think it brings a little bit of that 80s feel to the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about the 80s. I mean, I just love it. I love the music. I love the movies. I love the fashion, although it's over the top, but I'm pretty over the top, so I love that too. Mm-hmm. It's just great. I mean, it's a great movie. And again, I'm not going to waste your time talking about it, but it's just a lot of fun.
Again, people know my two favorite things in film are characters. This film has fantastic characters.
Yep.
I'm also a fan of the style. Yeah. I'll say, like Terminator 2 Judgment Day, this is the perfect mixture of practical and CGI, but the CGI holds up well.
The CGI in this still holds up today, and that's the incredible part.
And here's what we kind of forgotten about the relationship between practical and CGI.
Yeah.
You kind of need both so the eye is tricked, because if it's just all CGI, you're going to know it because it's obvious to you. You eventually start to see it.
Yeah.
Because of how, you know, shadows and lighting are, secrets of magic, reveal, all that
exactly.
stuff. But this is a film that's just so timeless in that way. Kind of like King Kong is for me, the original one.
Yeah.
It's like how they had to kind of move like creativity to a new extreme just to make it believable.
Yeah, true.
And that's what I love about this one, too, in terms of this CGI and practical effects creativity.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. That's the 90s. Anything else?
That's basically all I have to say. Definitely shorter than our personal top 10.
Yeah.
People are still probably listening to that one.
I know, right? So the next time we talk about the decades, we'll be talking about the 2000s. That's going to be an interesting episode.
Or we'll just do a swerve and go back to the 60s.
That's true. We may go back to the 60s. We have a lot to talk about there.
Who knows what we'll do?
Yeah, no one knows. But that's what keeps it fun. But do you have anything else to add?
90s was fun.
Was fun, yeah. As always, folks, check us out on iTunes. Let's see, Google Play, KRCU.org.
NPR One app.
NPR One app, that's right. Go to Facebook, check out KRCU's Facebook page, like the page. You can also keep up with what we're doing. We have some exciting stuff coming up throughout the summer, as always. And we'll get into some fun series here in the fall. And then I think we just decided we're going to do a Christmas special. That's a long ways away, but, you know, brainstorming while.
We got a plan.
Yeah, a lot of planning to do. But, yeah, check us out, guys. And as always, for Real Talk, I'm Colin Ritter.
I'm Peter Lewis.
We'll see you at the movies.